We acknowledge our inability to live up to God's holy standards. We confess the weakness of our nature. We can't keep the law of God.
There is no escaping this simple truth. In this world, you will have temptation. We can't predict when or where it will strike or what form it will take, but we can be sure that it will strike and that it will be tempting. Fortunately, the Christian can also be 100% sure that God can help him through the temptation. Welcome to The Voice of Truth with Pastor J.D. Glasscock of Calvary Chapel, Houston Metro. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, the Apostle Paul gives us a simple formula for how we can escape temptation. In fact, this passage was the very first Bible verse I ever marked in my Bible because it told me I could trust the God of the Bible in every situation. So let's join Pastor J.D. and the congregation of Calvary Chapel for our study of encouragement for the tempted.
So let's look today, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, beginning at verse 13. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. There are many misconceptions about temptation, but one thing that we all understand, temptation is a real problem that we all face. The believer is going to be tempted. There is the story of a young soldier who was wounded at the Battle of Shiloh during the American Civil War, and he was ordered to go to the rear. The fighting was fierce, and within minutes he returned to his commanding officer and he shouted, "Captain, give me a gun. This fight ain't got no rear." And I think that's how temptation is. We look at temptation and we just say, you know, this is a fight that ain't got no rear. It's everywhere. And so the title of this message is Encouragement for the Tempted. I thank God that He knows that we need encouragement during times of temptation. No one can encourage you more than the one who has endured the exact same hardship as you. And the writer of Hebrews tells us that we have a great high priest who sympathizes with our weaknesses, Jesus Christ. He understands our temptations. In fact, Hebrews 4:15 points out, He was in all points tempted just like you and I, and yet without sin. In every way that you've ever been tempted, Jesus was tempted, yet He didn't sin. He never once gave in, even into a single temptation. And yes, we do need encouragement. We need help. And we do have a faithful high priest who understands. And maybe you've resisted temptation this past week and you can celebrate that you withstood. Or it could be that you've compromised. Could be that you feel discouraged. It could be that you feel as though you're being tempted relentlessly and you just wish that it would all go away. Now, I'm going to simply break this passage down this morning into five different phrases, and within each one of those phrases, there is a single word that I will be focusing on. Five phrases, five points of encouragement with five important words. The first point of encouragement, look at verse 13. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. Now, the word that I want you to look at this morning is man. If you look at this phrase, common to man in the Greek, it's actually a single word, anthropinos, which means of man. It comes from anthropos, which is just the word man. And what Paul is saying is that there is nothing unusual about temptation. It's part of being human. Because you are human, you are tempted. Now, by the way, I used to think that temptation was a result of the fall, but if you look at the story of the fall, Adam and Eve there in the garden in the first few chapters of Genesis, you can only reach one conclusion. We were created with a human nature, and when God created us, He created us as temptable beings. God created us. When He made us, we were temptable. Even the angels were created as being temptable. Satan was perfect until he succumbed to the temptation of pride. And what that means is that temptation in and of itself is not a sin. Now, this has been one of the great misunderstandings of temptation. Just because an evil thought has come into your mind does not mean that you have sinned. It's impossible There is no way that you can live and not be tempted. You will have thoughts. You will have disgusting thoughts. You will have prideful thoughts. You will have lustful thoughts. You will have greedy thoughts. That is our nature as human beings. You are tempted not because you are a sinner. You are tempted because God created you with a nature that can be tempted. Now, we do sin, and we sin because we are sinners, and that's what happens if we succumb to temptation. It's a sin, and we have a sin nature, and that we inherited from Adam. That came as a result of the fall. But when God made the first man, he knew what he was doing. And for his own purpose, which you and I probably don't fully understand, he made humans with a nature that can be tempted. Our tendency as believers is to kick ourselves around about temptation, and I do believe Satan helps us along in that regard. A thought comes into your mind that is less than pure, and next thing you know, you're condemning yourself. You're disgusted with the thought, and you say, a horrible, wretched person that I am. How could I even think such a thought? And we begin to accuse ourselves. And here in this passage, the apostle is helping us. He's helping us who are tempted to have a clear understanding that temptation is simply a fact of human nature. Now, there is a reason why Paul wrote to the Corinthians about temptation. The moral culture in which that church existed was really no better than our own. Those people were surrounded by seductive opportunities just as you and I are today. Corinth was probably the Sodom of the New Testament. It could be like, if you were going to Calvary Chapel of Sodom, everything is just fine as long as you're in the church and you're around believers. But there you are, you're sitting in church, listening to a good message by Pastor J.D., And then at some point, we have to get up and we have to leave. And we walk out the door, and it's like immediately as you walk out the door, you're going to see something that will stoke the fire of your human imagination. It's all around us. And those who were at Corinth, they were facing those conditions just like we were today. They were just in a cesspool of immorality. And essentially, Paul is saying, don't let the fact that you are tempted discourage you. It's part of our human nature, and we all share in that same nature. It's common to men. Now, not only should this encourage you, it should help you to have compassion upon others. I mean, you look around you today, the person next to you is tempted just like you are. Be sensitive to their human nature. We should never be shocked at the temptations of another. I did read about a young priest who was learning the ropes of being in the confessional booth. There was an older priest who was mentoring him through the process. After a day of being in the confessional booth, the older priest took the young man aside. He said, when a person has finished with confession, you have got to say something other than, wow. No temptation has overcome you except such as is common to man. Don't be surprised at the thoughts that come into your own mind. Don't be surprised at the thoughts and the temptations of others around you. Now, Paul's second point of encouragement, but God is faithful. I underlined in this phrase the word faithful. The Greek word pistos, that word is derived from a Greek word patho. Patho means to have confidence. It means to trust. It means to be reliable. So pistos takes that idea of confidence and trust and it applies it to the nature of God, and what you end up with is trustworthy. God is trustworthy. You can trust God with everything. And because God is trustworthy, you trust Him completely and you can trust God. You can place your full confidence in God. God is faithful. Nowhere in the Bible does it tell us to trust in our own faithfulness. In fact, just the opposite is true. Paul writing to Timothy, he said, God is faithful. Even when we are faithless, still He remains faithful, and that is the nature of God. He is faithful. Now, as part of Paul's introduction to this letter, Paul emphasizes the faithfulness of God, and that seems to be something that Paul felt that this church needed. If you look at 1 Corinthians, just the first chapter, verse 9, it says, God is faithful. God is faithful, by whom you were called into the fellowship of His Son, Jesus Christ, our Lord. And I believe the reason for this emphasis on God's faithfulness is simply this. All religions of the world center upon the faithfulness of man. People are judged by their faithfulness to adhere to the tenets of their religion. Isn't that true? Christianity is different. Paul has just finished making a statement about the nature of our humanity. It's temptable to the core. We are fallible. We can't always be counted on to do the right thing. And on top of the nature that we have, that we're created to be temptable, we have the sin nature that we inherited from Adam. Paul, writing to the Romans, said, "Therefore, just as through one man sin entered into the world, and death through sin, thus death spread to all men because all have sinned." That's our nature. We are temptable, and we are sinners, and if left up to our created nature to be tempted and our inherited nature by which we commit sin, if we were left up to that, there would be no hope. And yet, that is the very hope that the religions of the world, put their trust in. A person, a man, a woman's faithfulness. I have to say, I feel sorrow for those people who rely on their own faithfulness to adhere to a religious system. Because if they're at all honest with themselves, they have to be very miserable people. They are people who believe that they are good because they can keep a list of rules, but they are deceived. They ignore what goes on inside of their mind. They ignore their attitudes of pride. They ignore their secret lusts. They ignore their indifference to the suffering of others. They're no better than the Pharisees who just put on a face that was a religious face. That's not so with Christianity. We are to acknowledge our weakness. We acknowledge our inability to live up to God's holy standards. We confess the weakness of our nature. We can't keep the law of God. Therefore, central to our faith is not our faithfulness, but the faithfulness of God. And that's what Paul was pointing out to these Corinthians who were surrounded by temptations. Man, God is faithful. Now, what Paul does next, after drawing your attention to the faithful nature of God, he applies the faithfulness of God to our own human temptable nature. Third point of encouragement, verse 13, "But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able." Now, the word that I underlined in this phrase is the word able. The word able, the Greek word is dunamai. Those of you who have studied some Greek, you may recognize this word as it sounds a whole lot like the Greek word dunamis. Now, you remember dunamis is the word that describes the power of God. In fact, it's the word that we get our English word dynamite from. Dunamai is derived from the word power. And here it is used to describe the power that you and I have to withstand temptation. Now, you know, growing up as a ranch kid, one of my summer jobs was breaking horses, and people would bring me their horses. They would drop them off, and I can assure you, when they dropped that horse off, it had no ability whatsoever. It couldn't even be led by a halter. The first thing I had to do is I had to halter break that horse. One of the keys to working with horses is that you, as a trainer, need to understand what ability that animal has at any given time during the breaking process. You cannot expect a horse that has never had a saddle on his back to stand still the first time you attempt to saddle him. In fact, that horse is going to look at you, and they do, and they look at that saddle, and they cock their head, and their ear goes down, and it's pointing at that saddle, and you're bringing it up, and they're moving away. And it wouldn't be fair of you as a trainer to expect a horse at that stage just to stand still patiently. So at every point in the breaking process, you are assessing the horse's ability, and you don't push that animal beyond what they are capable of doing. Now, there are people who do break horses, and they push the animal beyond the ability of what they have, and they end up with a horse, not that's broke, but they end up with a broken horse. And what Paul is alluding to is that temptation is part of a training process. God is growing us. God is developing our Christian character. And in that regard, God has a purpose for allowing every temptation that comes into our life. There are no random temptations. God allows each one, and there's a purpose in it. It's all to be a part of the training process that we all must go through. Now, God knows each one of us intimately. He knows you, he knows me, and he knows that he sifted every temptation that comes your way, and not even one temptation would God ever give you that you're not able to handle. As the Union Pacific Railroad was being constructed, there was an elaborate trestle bridge was built across a large canyon in the west. Wanting to test the bridge, the builder loaded a train with enough extra cars and equipment to double its normal payload. The train was then driven to the middle of the bridge where it stayed an entire day. One worker asked, "Are you trying to break this bridge?" "Oh no," the builder replied, "I'm trying to prove that the bridge won't break." God is faithful. We can trust God with this. We have absolute confidence that God is never going to give us more in temptation than what we are able to bear. Now the fourth point of encouragement Paul gives to us is that there is a way out of every temptation. Look with me at the middle of verse 13. "But with the temptation will also make the way of escape." The word I underlined here is escape. It's the Greek word ekbasis. Ek means out. Basis means to go. The point, every temptation has a way out. Now, usually the way out is very simple and it's very obvious. I think of the old classic story, the Old Testament story. Joseph, his handsome appearance, his position, placed him in the proximity, you remember, of Mrs. Potiphar, who was a seductress. She was probably visually the most enticing woman in the country just because of her position. And she was attracted to Joseph, and she got Joseph to come to her room, and there she sought to seduce Joseph. What she did, we don't know. But we know that she got close enough to Joseph to take hold of his cloak. Now, it doesn't tell us what was going through Joseph's mind, but you can assume that there was some temptation. But he had the good sense to resist the temptation, and what did Joseph do? He ran. In fact, he ran so quickly his cloak was torn off of his body. He never even stopped to go back to get his cloak. And this is a classic example of a man who knew the way out of temptation, and he took it. Mark Twain was the one that said, "There are several good protections against temptation, but the surest is cowardice." Someone else came along, took that saying of Mark Twain's, that quote, and gave it a modern twist, and they said, "The best protection against temptation is a good pair of Nikes." The Apostle Paul picks up on this obvious way out, and if you look down in verse 14, "Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry." Run, flee from temptation. Now, I emphasize this word, this Greek word, ekbasis, to go out, because in the Greek, we can't negotiate about what the word escape means. There are people who believe that the way to escape is to give in. Well, I heard about a man who decided to go on a diet, and just like me, he struggled with donuts. What made matters worse is that there was a Krispy Kreme donut shop right on the way to work. Well, he arrives at work, one of his buddies sees him and he's coming into the office, he's carrying a box of Krispy Kreme donuts, and he asks his friend, "Hey man, what happened to your diet?" He responded, "Well, as I was driving by the donut shop, I prayed, 'God, if it's your will that I don't have donuts this morning, then please don't let there be an open parking spot.' Well, on my eighth trip around the block, there were two open parking spots right out front." Now, there is a man who is working on a way to get into temptation and not serious about finding a way out. God is faithful. He will never give you more than what you can bear, and he is faithful to give you a way out every time. You can be certain that before the sin is actually committed, God will be showing you, God will be telling you that there's a way out. You don't have to fall into this. There's a way out. But it's your decision to take the way out. Let's just go back for a moment, summarize these points of encouragement. Number one, you're human. To be tempted is nothing to be ashamed of. It's unavoidable. Number two, God is faithful. Even when you are weak and Even when you feel as though you cannot bear the temptation, God is faithful, He is reliable, He is trustworthy. Number three, He knows you intimately, He knows you completely, and He knows your power or lack thereof, and He will never give you more than you can bear. Number four, God will always give you a way out of temptation. Listen, it's unavoidable. Sin is a choice. And finally, the last point of encouragement that Paul gives to us, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Now, the word that I underlined is the word bear. It's made up of true Greek words, hupa, which means to be under something, and phero, which means to carry. So you've got hupa phero, that's the Greek here. And this speaks of two things very quickly. First of all, it speaks to the nature of temptation itself. It means that temptation can be a burden. How many of you feel that temptation is such a burden? It's a load to carry. Over the course of your life, you will carry a great load of temptation. Now, what you may wonder is, what is encouraging about that? What's encouraging about bearing? What's encouraging about carrying a heavy load? Well, it's good for this reason. It's often through temptation that we become strong, powerful men and women of God. And I would venture to say that those who have faithfully walked the longest are the strongest. They have endured years, seasons of temptation. One thing I can assure you of, whenever you see the word bear, you can be certain that God never leaves you alone to bear a burden. Because He knows us, He's been through all forms of temptation Himself, He's right there with us, He comes alongside of us, and the mature believer has learned to rely upon the strong shoulders of God. Psalm 55:22. Put that in the margin of your Bibles, cast your burden on the Lord, and He shall sustain you, He shall never permit the righteous to be moved. There are many types of temptation. And they do burden us down. Sometimes the temptation, I think for many, is just, you know, I've gone through so much, I want to give up on life itself. There are those who are tempted to just give up on life. That's a temptation, to destroy your own life. But the good news about the word bear is that whenever you see it, you can believe that God will never give you more than you can bear. And then God comes alongside of you, and if you will cast your burden on Him, He is faithful to sustain you, just as the psalmist wrote. He will bear your burdens. This reminded me of a poem, and you've probably heard this poem. But one night a man had a dream, and he dreamed he was walking along the beach with the Lord, and across the dark sky flashed scenes from his life. For each scene he noticed two sets of footprints in the sand, one belonging to him, and the other to the Lord. When the last scene of his life flashed before him, he looked back at the footprints in the sand, and he noticed that many times along the path of his life, there was only one set of footprints. He also noticed that it happened the very lowest and saddest times in his life. And this bothered him, and he questioned the Lord about it. And he said, "Lord, You said that once I decided to follow You, You'd walk with me all the way. But I've noticed that during the most troublesome times in my life, there is only one set of footprints. And I don't understand why, when I needed You most, You would leave me." The Lord replied, "My precious, precious child, I love you and I would never leave you. During your times of trial and suffering, temptations, when you see only one set of footprints in the sand, it was then I was carrying you." Can you see the encouragement in the word bear? He will never give us more than we can bear.
You have been listening to The Voice of Truth with Pastor J.D. Glasscock of Calvary Chapel, Houston Metro. For a copy of today's message, Encouragement for the Tempted, call 281-499-6301. That's 281-499-6301. Or visit our website at calvary.cc.